So, Parish Reverends of Retrogrades, greeting. Greetings to you all. In the week of April the 8th, AD 2024, we are living in the wake of the release of the new CDF document, Dignitas Infinita. It sounds a little bit like a car commercial or something. I want to get the new Tesla Infinita. And look, at this point, we pretty much know the deal with the Francis Pontificate, unless you're especially slow or you try not to get obvious points. Everything is an angle on a doctrinal attack, a doctrinal revolution. Some are slower attacks, more plodding, more canting. Others are more deliberate. This is a historical process that's part of the Hegelian dialectic called punctuated equilibrium, where the revolutionaries keep the attack going almost level constantly, but slight with a slightly positive slope. You know, always a little bit uphill, moving toward their goal. And then with punctuated jumps up. So we got a punctuated jump up in the revolutionary candor and the revolutionary program of Pope Francis I in April of 2016. We got another one in 2019. We got another one in 2022. It tends to be every 3 years we get a big leap up where we're plodding up slightly linearly. It almost looks level, but always heading upward. Jump up with Amoris Laetitia, jump up with the Amazon Synod, jump up with the Synod on Synodality. And I would say that with regard to Dignitas Infinita, the document that was released early this week by Tucho Fernandez, it's closer to the near level plodding gradual progression of Francis's progressivism than to a big jump up. So but there, maybe it's a little bit in between. In this show today, this episode of Rules for Retrogrades, I plan to show you how and why you might consider it something in between, but closer to the level, steady, constant attack of Francis I on the church that's been going on for 11 years or so at this point. That's what today's episode will be in. How to say infinite dignity is errant. There are ways it's errant. How it's not errant, or at least how it's arguable. And then I'm going to make an analogy that I hope avails you all of tools for self-critique in Catholicism, characteristic of the post-conciliar era writ large. So those are the three things I hope to do today. I'd urge all of you, now that it is spring in full swing, to get out of your blue state and get to a red state today. You need to buy a house in the red state. And to do so, go to www.realestateforlife.org. A pro-life, pro-Catholic person will help you on the other end of things to get set up in a red state instead of a blue state. It will improve your life drastically. I mean, day to day. Thank you, Stevie. Further than this, I would advocate for my own channel. Please like this video. More important than that, please subscribe to this channel. If you want to support my work, lots of people are out there saying, wow, Tim, you do good work. How do I support? The first and most obvious and easiest way is through subscription to the YouTube channel. This is the main place to get my videos. Yeah, I always hang videos on other places, Rumble and Twitter, but this is the main place people consume Rules for Retrogrades content 3 times a week. So get it here, subscribe here. If you want to go up from there, if you want to support me, the channel, the upcoming projects. Locals and Subscribestar are the best way to do this. The links are attached to this video. Now, dignitas infinitam. I am not accustomed to the claim that, you know, Pope Splanners use, that news about Francis or the Vatican under Francis has overstepped its bounds, and specifically to say that the commentariat has overstepped by claiming Francis has overstepped. Maybe that's happened a little bit this week. I'm seeing reports of, Mirky, you hop out, sweetheart, having a Steph Curry moment. I'll see you downstairs, sweetheart. I'm hearing reports that this is a satanic document, that it's in, you know, like the next phase in Francis's evil plan. Now, that I'm not saying that Francis doesn't have an evil plan, so everyone calm down. I'm just saying Francis has never, even if this were the next big punctuated jump up, the big revolutionary attack that happens about once every 3 years, he never, ever places into the title of the document the plan of attack. So Amoris Laetitia, we call it the joy of sex, right? But it really, what the way he intended that Latin to translate is, or transliterate, is the joy of love. Sounds great. Do you love love? Do you love joy? I joy love. I love joy. Now, chapter 8 has some really, really, really not difficult, but tricky to parse revolutionary language that took a year or 6 months at least for even his fellow travelers to say, is this what you meant? And he said, yeah. And it was revolutionary, same as I said it was in April 2016. But he didn't put it in the title. So the Infinite Dignity document has presented folks with this weird titular moment, whereupon common Catholics and some of the commentariat that just knows something's wrong with Francis will say, human dignity is not infinite. Human beings can sin, right? I feel like a Pope explainer. I'm not. But there's a really, really simple distinction. When you begin studying metaphysics, you learn the difference between infinitude and eternity. So I think the majority of the commentary, since this is category A, an error that I don't think the document actually makes, or errors that the document doesn't actually apparently make. The first item of this first category would be infinite does not mean eternal. Think of infinite as signifying the idea that a given quantity is non-quantifiable. You either have it or you don't have it. That's the sense in which human beings have dignity. Dignity is marked by our image and likeness, that is will and intellect, to the Creator. So any human being has what's called a plenary existential goodness, an abundant existential goodness. Insofar as he was created by God, and he was made in the image and likeness of God, insofar as you have a rational will and an intellect that correspond with each other. So there's an existential perfection constitutive of human beings based on a kind of special unity. If we go into the metaphysics, it gets really boring and hard. It means not only individuality, but particularity. It's like chapter 4 of the De Ante et Essentia. Boring and difficult at the same time. like Niles Crane says, but you're both individual and particular. They don't mean the same thing. And every individual member of the species who's got a particular form unique to him, but also universal, shares in rational animality. This means a rational will and an intellect, and in a very real sense, and a non-Pope-splaining sense. You guys know I'm the last to Pope-splain on planet Earth. Just in an absolutely real sense, our dignity, because, you know, Jesus says most people go to hell. That kind of proves I'm not Pope-splaining right away. The Pope doesn't seem to think anyone does. He's, you know, item number 253, he's majorly wrong about Catholic teaching. Jesus says most people go to hell. The path to perdition is broad and most find it. Path to heaven is narrow and few find it. So if this document were called Dignity Eternal or Eternal Dignity, meaning it's never ending, that infinite dignity that human beings seem to enjoy by nature, by their quiddity, by their quiditative expression, the existential perfection of a human being based on special unity, then that would be wrong. Because most humans go to hell, it's told, and your infinite dignity ends at a moment in time. The fact that it's not eternal doesn't keep it from being infinite. The fact that it's infinite doesn't mean it's also eternal. So sorry to be technical here, but this is one of those things you learn when you're studying metaphysics. Is there's infinite just means it's non-quantifiable. It's non-fractile. A human being, qua human being, has dignity, and it doesn't, one human doesn't enjoy dignity in greater share than another. Okay, so that's it. So dignity can be infinite without being eternal. And a lot of folks online were just saying, I mean, this is literally one of those things you learn. You know, infinite does not mean eternal, and people mistake this. And I didn't even study theology. I studied philosophy, right? So you see people putting it into the theological context. Oh, infinite and eternal are interchangeable terms. They seem to be presupposing. And then I've corrected a few people, and it's almost like, well, this is Tim Gordon. He's definitely not Pope-splaining. He's the last guy to Pope-splain. But this is a very real distinction in metaphysics that antedates in my mind and method and expression any kind of theological usage of it. Your theology is usually kind of bastardizing philosophical terms, to be honest, just using them insofar as they're convenient. And so I've long distinguished between infinitude and eternality. Do you understand? Like someone, it can be, in some sense, if I turn the lights on in this room, though I wouldn't use the expression, they're infinitely on. The lights are on as long as they're on. That doesn't mean that the light switch can't go off in 30 seconds. It just means that it's a non-fractile metric when the lights are either on or off. Human beings either share in the plenary existential goodness of being made in the image likeness of God, having rational will and intellect, or they don't. Until we ask Thomas. Now, Thomas Aquinas will, who I pretty much always side with, will present a counterargument, and we're going to talk about that in a second when we move to Category B, where this document is errant. But I just want to say, it's kind of like you'd say, the lights are infinitely off right now. That doesn't mean they're eternally off. I don't use the overhead lights in this room when I use my box lights over here, my soft lights. So they're infinitely off right now, meaning in a non-fractile way, they can't be half on or off. They're just off. But they're not eternally off. As soon as I finish this video, first thing I do, I turn off the box lights and I go turn on the overhead lights. And since I'm talking about the overhead lights, not the box lights, they're infinitely but not eternally switched off now. So people were calling the document satanic based on this alone. I don't really have a big problem with saying that this pontificate has designs on real diabolic evil. I never have had that problem. So that's the big proposition you'd be hoping to avoid by pope-splaining, were this pope-splaining. It's not. I'm just saying the folks that have been rendering these determinations I've seen online just don't have the training to parse infinitude from eternality. And it's a huge distinction. It's like there. It's as basic as that, just at the level of philosophic know-how. So saying infinitude does not get one into the automatic trouble that saying eternality does. Okay, I've already flogged that horse. Now, Thomas, now we're going to come to where it's arguably incorrect to ever assert human beings have infinite dignity. So I guess we're getting into category B. Where is the document arguably wrong? And then we're going to talk about applications of the arguable errancy of the document and the applications and the intent, what we'd call the final cause of the document, almost certainly is evil, but that's category C. And a historical example of the abuse of the sense of infinite dignity that human beings possess in a non-fractile way in order to accomplish a leftist political end, which has been done with feminism. You might see where I'm going here. Thomas will say that even though he acknowledges the existential perfection of a human being based on special unity, having both individuality and particularity, unique to his quiddity, Thomas will say in the Summa that a man who sins deviates from the rational order and so loses his human dignity. This prescinds, I'm going to use a Thomistic term, no one knows what it means. This prescinds from the sense of his generic dignity. And see, again, people online Catholics, generally don't want to make these distinctions. So a man who sins does deviate from the rational order and so loses his human dignity. So in this sense, his dignity can be spoken of as fractile. He's losing the measure of his dignity as long as we prescind from the generic sense of dignity. And by generic, I mean we are species of a genus. We are animals, we are rational animals, and we are both individual and particular instances of rational animals with a nature that is common to us. So see, it turns into a boring show when you start being correct. It's not incorrect to say that in one sense, and John Paul II always, and again, I know I don't like to quote him, I think he's wrong about a lot. He was wrong about a lot, I can demonstrate it. But in his death penalty Jacobinism, JP2's, he pushed the view that the death penalty is deleterious of the dignity appurtenant to all human beings. I'm choosing my words carefully here. There are a few reasons why for this show, more carefully than I normally do. So JP2 pushed the idea that man's dignity was infinite. Thomas believed it in one sense, but not in another. A particular instance of a human being when we prescind from the generic definition of a human being, oh, by definition, human beings have a rational will and an intellect, and therefore, because that rational will and intellect is what sets us apart from the animals, it's our specific difference, and it's a specific image slash likeness of the creator that's unique to the creator and angels alone. We're the only things on earth with a body. Thomas says, well, in one sense, you can say that which marks us off from the animals, when we cease to function in accordance with it, we, as Boethius says, we don't actually sink to the level of the animals, we sink lower. A beast acting as a beast without a rational will and intellect is just what it's meant to be. It's not disordered for a beast to act like a beast. For a man to act like a beast means that he's actually inverted his intellect and his will toward improper ends. So it's he actually sinks lower than an animal. And in that sense, it's almost like his dignity is inverted. Yeah, an animal doesn't have dignity. A buffalo doesn't have dignity. But a human being who's acting like a buffalo is acting as befits something with not just zero dignity, but almost like negative dignity. Because he has those tools he needs to live out his dignified quiddity. And he's using them for an opposite purpose, to denude himself of his dignity. So in that sense, Thomas rather plainly says a human being can lose it. And I side with Thomas over JP too. But even Thomas says, well, this is in one sense, yes, dignity is not infinite. In another sense, it is. Generically, specifically. Okay. But Thomas would never contradict the idea that we put forth in part A of the show, where the sense of infinite dignity is not errant. Human dignity, understood as the existential perfection of a human being with his rational nature, based on special unity of individuality and particularity. This is like chapter 4 of the De Ante et Essentia, a very short, difficult document of Thomas Aquinas's, in almost in action. And it's just sort of above most people's pay grades who aren't trained metaphysicians, genus, species, esse essence, form matter, essence accidents. If you don't understand the modes of composition, this is kind of hard for you. But here's where John Paul II and Francis are, whether you like it or not, parish orphans or retrogrades. They are, as part of my category B analysis, they are just revolutionaries. They're using this finely tuned designation, whether or not human beings can ever be denuded of their dignity, like a weapon. In one sense, yes, in another sense, no, is probably the most accurate way of saying it. And let's just take JP2 as an analogy. I'm going to use two historical analogies as we move into category C. Ways that JP2 and Francis played upon the ambiguity in what it means for a human being to have dignity given directly from God, from image and likeness creation by God, in order to accomplish a revolutionary end. So this is sort of transition between B and C. Thomas said that, and this also proves that at least in one sense, Thomas did think human dignity was infinite, not eternal. No one thinks that. That's not Catholic. Because those condemned to hell no longer have dignity. But, and the same as God doesn't love them anymore, right? The blessed hate the damned, even former family members. God hates the damned. So if God hates something, it can't have dignity. So it's definitely not eternal. There's no argument for that. But infinite doesn't mean eternal. Infinite has these two senses. Are we talking generic or specific? Prescinding from the general quiditative essence or not prescinding from it? And everyone's like, what? Well, Tom, I'll prove to you that Thomas, at least in one sense, did believe it was infinite, human dignity. Because he says in the Summa that when you put a condemned prisoner to death, you are acting in accordance with that condemned prisoner's dignity. Let me repeat that. When a prisoner, a guilty criminal, is put to death, the state is acting in accordance with that guilty prisoner's dignity. Meaning, presumably, something really, really vile, the commission of murder or some sort of capital offense. Thomas presupposes, yeah, he still has human dignity in the generic sense. He's a human being. He wasn't acting in accord with those capacities and appetites which make him dignified. He failed to adequate them, but he still has those capacities. And insofar as he still has those capacities for rational will and intellect, he still has dignity. But JP2 disagrees not with the designation Thomas Aquinas makes about dignity. JP2 likes that. Even a guilty, condemned murderer still has some dignity. JP2 loves that. Thomas, in that other sense we talked about, sort of denies it. But for the moment, he says, yes, he still has dignity. But killing, punishing a human being proportionately and justly is an expression of that human, that guilty human being's dignity. To not punish, to fail to render justice upon that guilty human being is an expression of a lack of dignity. And JP2 just flips the script on Thomas Aquinas. JP2 says that certain kinds of punishment, even if they're proportional, death penalty for a murderer, for instance, is the classic example. Even though it's proportional, it's dignity stripping, and that just inverts Thomas Aquinas' teaching and the former view of the church up to John Paul II himself. He's a real revolutionary. And you guys still, a lot of you still haven't realized what a radical left revolutionary JP2 at times was. Not at all times, like Francis. If, at all times, Francis is a radical revolutionary. But JP2 picked his battles with feminism, with ecumenism, and with the death penalty. Boy, he was more of a Jacobin than Francis. And you guys still think I'm exaggerating. But let me read something from the New Atlantis. Discussing the topic of murder and replying to an objection, St. Thomas writes, "A man who sins deviates from the rational order and so loses his human dignity. To that extent, then, he lapses into the subjection of beasts." See how he says "to that extent"? In other translations, it'll say "in that sense." He lapses into the subjection of beasts, whether we're prescinding or not prescinding from his rational nature. "We may contrast this," says the article, "with the words of Pope John Paul II in the encyclical letter Evangelium Vitae, released in 95. Not even a murderer loses his personal dignity." Now, does that modifier personal make the same carve-out or exception, prescinding from, not prescinding from, rational nature, that Aquinas does? Arguably, it does make that same carve-out, in which case JP2 would not be wrong. He's just leaning into something that sounds wrong. "The seeming divergence between these two important and influential statements within the same tradition of thought is striking." Aquinas seems to think that the murderer, by turning against what reason requires of us, becomes more beast than man. I gave you the Boethius example that everybody in the Catholic tradition after Boethius uses. Losing the dignity that characterizes human beings, the rational species. JP2, in a context discussing the death penalty in general, and Cain's murder of Abel in particular, does not seem to think of dignity as something that can be lost by human beings, even when they act in ways that fall short of the excellences that mark human nature. So I've already covered this out the eyeballs. This soul distinction is not, as simpletons think, a really interesting point. Let's go have coffee and discuss it for 8 hours. It's simply a question of whether we are willing to, in our conversation, prescind from or not prescind from the rational nature of man and say, okay, do we bracket this or not? In general or in particular? That's all it is. And I think JP2 would be forced as a phenomenologist, not a Thomist, to say, well, in Thomas's sense, Thomas is correct, that there are two senses of the question. The article goes on, "The tension between these two notions of human dignity is evident, and I suspect that anytime we think seriously about a range of issues in bioethics, in this case, like the death penalty, we are likely to find ourselves caught up in just this tension, looking for ways to distinguish one meaning of the term excuse me, from another." All right, I think that's good enough. This is well said. Now, does the death penalty, there are two questions when it comes to the death penalty, which I don't care about today. I care very much about it. Very pro-death penalty. Death penalty is an affirmative good when it's used proportionately and justly by the state, by the prerogative of the state, the power to kill from the state that even Jesus acknowledged. He told Pontius Pilate, "You have the power to kill me. That power to kill me is called the prerogative, comes directly to you, the ruler, from God. Jesus says it, St. Paul says it in the Bible. Every Catholic thinker ever until John Paul II, or 99.9% of them anyway, thought it. Francis is only too happy to pick up the ball and say, human dignity is infinite. Francis seems to say it in all ways. Tucho Fernandez seems to say it in all ways. And point B, and I don't agree that in all ways it is. And point B, punishing someone, even if it's proportionate, with death, is an inherent outstripping of dignity. No. Disagree. Strong disagreement. Okay, so let's talk about category C. The ways in which the very, very time-tested, conceptual pitfalls that revolutionaries who talk about the, in one sense, accurate, in another, inaccurate, infinite dignity of human beings can weaponize this distinctionless use of infinite dignity against the teachings of Roman Catholicism. JP2 did it lots with the concept of radically infinite dignity. I want to talk now about sex relations. Evidently, it's my favorite topic. That's what everyone, all my opponents say. So the radically equal dignity of men and women. JP2, as he wrote his letter to women, as he wrote Love and Responsibility, as he was crafting these absolutely fallacious notions of dual submission and some of its conceptual progeny, new Christian feminism that JP2 wanted to create and did create out of whole cloth, a new Christian feminism. He would play on the concept of radically equal in dignity, men and women, in a way that's similar to the way that Francis and Tucho are playing upon radically infinite dignity in order to probably push LMNOP Skittles, which is where they, I think they're going with this, which I said in the last show. So assume you've watched my last show on the document when it was fresh. I think that's almost doubtlessly where the Francis acolytes are going with the misuse or false light, at least, of the concept of the infinitude of dignity. So the analogy is this. In one sense, men and women do not have the same portion share of rational will and intellect. In one sense, if you were to quantify, if you were to, and I said, well, in some sense, it's non-fractal, but if you were to quantify, but who shares in God's rational nature more, men or women? It's men. All of the Catholic teachers are very clear about this. All of the eight original doctors, Thomas Aquinas. So if it's fractal, then men and women would not be, in that sense, equal in dignity, right? Rational nature and ability to use, capacity to use intellect. And this is, I'm not just relying on theological distinctions, right? There's like zero female chess champions. If you look at things like mechanical engineering, it's 99-1 male. The ability to rotate a cube in your phantasms, you know, rotate at 90 degrees, rotate at 180 degrees. This is a male thing. Females can't do it by and large. So if we're talking about the radically equal dignity of human beings as pertaining to will and intellect, then in one sense you would say, well, males and females are not equal in dignity. Remember, Thomas called females deficient males or something like that. In that sense, he's just doing the math. But in the sense that, once again, when we don't prescind from the rational nature, then the share that a human being, male or female, has in dignity is non-fractile. It's more like the lights in this, the overhead lights in this room, either on or off. Your dog has zero dignity, even though he's man's best friend. And every member of your family, even the hated members of extended family or whatever, all of them have infinite dignity in the sense where we're speaking generically. They have the capacity. They infinitely have the capacity for dignity, even though the ones who don't wind up in the good place, heaven, will, you know, definitely not have eternal infinite dignity, as we said in opening. So JP2 played frequently upon this distinction, played upon the, I don't want to assume the absolute worst about JP2, as I'm customarily do about Francis. I think Francis is worse, but I will say that JP2 seemed to be using rhetorically that in one out of two senses, men and women have equal dignity. Now, they're never equal in rank, but he was saying that in one of two senses, they do share an equal non-fractal dignity. And from that, he implied they're equal in rank. And that was the whole parlor trick. Now, from infinite dignity, Tucho and Francis and their partisans, I think, want you to go, oh, in one of two senses, human beings' dignity is radically infinite, even if not eternal. And therefore, kind of like JP2 said about women or the death penalty, therefore, we should seek to discuss, express, encourage the positive aspects of Skittles relationships. This is language from the Relatio, the midterm report of the 2014 Synod. You can still go read it. It's hard to find, but you can find it if you look hard. That sent Cardinal Sarah and the Africans a wailing. Thank goodness for them. A wailing about who is this new pope? Who are these St. Gallen Northern European goons? Who are the Synod Fathers at the first family synod in October 2014? The midterm report, the Relatio said, we have to start acknowledging the positive aspects or dimensions of these Skittles relationships. And then they connected those, you know, the needful, ostensibly needful, they claim needful, acknowledgement by us of Skittles Catholics' mortally sinful relationships as based on the fact that in not all ways can we say even, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah type sins fail to denude someone of their generic dignity. And I'm likening that moment to the moment where JP2 said, hey, men and women are in one out of two senses equal in dignity, therefore, aren't they really equal in rank? No, they're not. And he tried to say they're equal in rank by this absurd concept of mutual submission, this violative of the principle of contradiction concept of mutual submission. So it's a similar moment. So you could go, A, in this sense, dignity can be called infinite. B, in this other sense, dignity should not be referred to as infinite. And C, for death penalty, for Christianizing feminism, the way JP2 did. He was really, really bad on that. And then for Christianizing Skittles relationships, these three issues, you can play upon the difficulty to distinguish properly between the two senses of dignity in order to weaponize Roman Catholicism and to change, to modify Catholic teaching. Look, one thing that has become painfully evident to me doing this week in, week out over the last almost 6 years, doing two, at the bare minimum, two shows a week, two episodes a week for almost 6 years. This summer, it'll be 6 years that I started doing this. It's, you know, three shows a week, sometimes four shows a week. Leaders in general who are less than honest, which is almost all of them, and this has been very inclusive of our one pope that we've had over the last 6 years, regularly weaponize the popular mind's conflation of difficult distinctions. So if there's a distinction that needs to be made between A and A prime, and most people are incapable of doing it, they don't have the training, then this is fertile ground for a kind of weaponization of that conflation. And this is a perfect instance. Some folks are out there who don't have the training are out there saying this is satanic. This is the worst thing Francis has done. No. This is bad. I mean, it's bad because we know where he's going. So if we intentionally fail to prescind from what the design is likely, then, you know, then it's a different outcome than if we allow ourselves to prescind from where what France's intents apparently seem to be. But it's there are still, even if we call it what it probably is, they're moving towards rationalizing, justifying, lionizing the positive aspects of Skittles relations. That's where I think they're going. That's where LifeSite thinks they're going. Then even then, it's too small a step to rank up there with Francis's top 25, like, material heresies. He has so many. So I was surprised to see so many folks saying that this is like a top five Francis move. I don't know if anyone put it in those terms, but lots of people out there on the Catholic spaces were saying this is it. And I'm like, oh no. I mean, it might be the worst document ever released in the average pontificate, which the average Roman Catholic pontificate ends up avoiding catastrophic documents. So this might be the worst for your run-of-the-mill Catholic pontiff, but not for this one. This one's unique. I mean, if every day that Francis stalls or fails to, I won't beg the question, come out and reify female deaconesses, I'm surprised. I'm like, you have the power. No one can stop you as you live and breathe. You're ostensibly the Pope. No one judges the Pope while you live and breathe. That doesn't mean we can't reason about it and say, look, this is really bad. It just means no one can stop it. There's no, like, line item veto. So I'm just shocked. I'm shocked that he's not doing more stuff. I mean, he did it with divorce, communion for divorce and remarriage. That's material heresy. And he said, oh, I'm not going to do this. I am going to do this. He wrangled his hands. He bowed his time. And then he just outright did it. In September of 2016, he was like, you have the only correct interpretation. Those of you who say, those bishops, who say that adultery is just allowed now in the context of adulterous second unions. It's just allowed. And then he not only wrote that rescript to the Buenos Aires bishops, but the same day he wrote it, the same day he published it anyway, he put it into the Acta Apostolica Sedis. That's really bald-faced. That's really unabashed. So I realized that he didn't start out in such an unabashed fashion. He started out with arguably the first Synod on the Family 2 years earlier, prepping for the Synod on the Family in 2014. So he gets more open and notorious as he goes along. That's how Francis's incrementalism works. But I'm just making the point that this document is maybe openly squinting at justifying the positive aspects of Skittles, but it's not at it's still at an inchoate, nascent phase. They're still trying to move as fast as they can, and every week, every month, it's being proved they have to keep extending the synod on synodality. They're like, these damned conservatives are just slowing up the works. They're slowing up the works here. They're gumming up the cogs of the machine. These American trads. So I'm not jumping down the throats of anybody that I think overreacted to infinite means eternal, or just made the plain mistake. I understand it. And those people who made that mistake are certainly, I think, correct about the end game. And that's what really matters. I'm just saying, people were asking me in my show that I did on Monday, don't you think this is like satanic? I'm like, no. I mean, it's only in the broad, plodding, incrementalized sense that all of Francis's actions are. But if you want sexy, mask off, mask drop, I'm the monster, I own being the monster moments, Francis has had those, and this isn't one of them, right? He did that with Amoris Laetitia. He did that in the Vatican Gardens with Pachamama. He did that temporarily. The biggest mask drop in the pontificate was the Eugenio Scalfari interviews. And those things were the worst. Jesus wasn't part of the Trinity while he lived. He told Scalfari that. But it was only a temporary mask drop because he retained that oh-so-invaluable plausible deniability. Even though the Vatican never came out and denied or decried, it's kind of in ambiguity now because of Scalfari's style of reportage. The late Eugenio Scalfari, who would take notes the old-fashioned journalistic way, just shorthand, and then reproduce the interview. You've heard me talk about this a lot. That was a mask-off moment. The Morris was a mask-off moment. The Amazon Synod was a mask-off moment. Fiducia Supplicans was a mask-off moment. This, I think, is just one more pawn being moved, such as to further the Fiducia Supplicans agenda. I hope this clarified. I've had this little sickness, bacterial infection. Sorry if I was trying to do some basics at explaining metaphysics, genus, species, general, particular. And sorry if it wasn't super clear today. I hope it was. God bless you all. Keep praying for the pontificate and even this particular pope that he'll be converted to Roman Catholicism. Deus vult.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.